Peggy, give me the thumbs up. You got the thumbs up or?
Got the thumbs up.
I need 1 second going live on Facebook.
Sure.
Commissioner, how are you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
These masks are like, where is that voice coming from?
Just start gesturing wildly.
We are live on Facebook and recording.
Okay, well, thank you. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Leon County Research and Development Authority Board of Governors meeting. It is officially 11:03, so we're going to kick it off. With that, calling it to order, introduction of guests. Are there any?
Yes. We have Stephen Jass from Research on Investment, Christina Paredes from the Office of Economic Vitality, as well as Kevin Gerke, also from the Office of Economic Vitality, Cam Whitlock from Architects Lewis and Whitlock. If I'm missing anyone who's...
I think probably just Drew. I don't know if we said Drew Dietrich.
So oh, Drew. OEB yes, well. Drew also from OEB.
Well, very glad to have all of our guests here, and we'll certainly honor everybody's time by way of how we move forward in our agenda. With the first item of business being the approval of participation by electronic means, and certainly that's for all the individuals that are here in the room that make the quorum, we need to acknowledge and vote that those are on the Zoom can participate. So is there a motion?
So moved.
So moved.
Okay. Okay. It's been properly motioned and seconded. The approval of participation by electronic means. All in favor, acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Motion carries. Are there any modifications to our agenda?
Yes, there is one modification. I sent this item out late last night. This is a committee charter for what we're dubbing the Intel Oversight Committee. And I suggest that you consider that item after item number 10, which is the architect's contract for the incubator.
Thank you. Are there other modifications? Okay, hearing none, we'll move forward. Are there any public comments? Again, so we will move swiftly to it. Again, want to welcome our guest, not really guest, just really great partners. So that's Christina Paredes, Office of Economic Vitality, her great leadership. And it looks like we're going to have a host of conversations, but I would be remiss if I didn't say that it is great to see how our partnership has just evolved. It's amazing. You see it in all parts of our community and the messaging, whether it's from us or whether it's from them, it is evident that we are working together on a one accord with that. So Christina, thank you for your leadership and also for your recent selection and announcement as being one of the top 50, if I recall correctly, economic development leaders in the nation. So thank you for your leadership.
Yeah. Congratulations, Christina.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. It's very humbling, and I was beyond thrilled, but really it's something for all of us to say how far we've come as a community. And I thank you so much for your partnership and the leadership of the city and the county. I think, you know, I say it all the time, economic development is a true team sport, and that couldn't be more evident in the conversation that we're going to have today and the one that we were able to have yesterday through the actions of the EVLC and the MWSBE Citizen Committee. So thank you all for what you do to help grow our local economy.
Lena, I hope they doubled your salary.
At least.
It's onward and upward, David. Onward and upward, Dave. So today we're going to present to you kind of the project development pipeline, what we are working on from a competitive standpoint, and how our relationship works with ROI. You'll hear from Stephen Jass, too, talking about, you know, the progress and how everything was built in towards going towards the magnetic capital of the world and really being targeted in our focus. This work works very nicely with what the Magnetic Technologies Committee Task Force does, as well as you know, the work that you do at Innovation Park too. And I really think through the big announcement of the incubator that really helps fill a much needed gap here in our community and will continue to help drive our economic competitiveness. So, Drew, if you could please bring up the slide.
We may need to allow that if we haven't already.
So while Drew's doing that, I just wanted to highlight for you that we're currently working 10 recruitment projects in our office. And basically these are projects with measurable traction. We were very pleased to work with Danfoss and with Innovation Park to make that announcement successful, and couldn't be more excited about that. Kind of building off of that, using that great news and that announcement, we were able to reach out to our other 10 companies that have these measurable tractions and showcase, you know, what our community has to offer and who is choosing Tallahassee to expand. So you'll hear a little bit from Stephen today too. One of these projects is one that went from a conversation about research to, hey, what if we're looking to onshore our manufacturing? So what if we did that here in Tallahassee? And that conversation is just being framed. And that's probably about a 2 to 3 year process. Just to give you some context, when we first started working with Danfoss until they brought into the announcement, that was about 18 months. So again, these competitive projects, they take time. It is a marathon, not a sprint, and we work with them very closely. You can see here what Drew is showing you is that competitive projects pipeline, how projects that are competitive, looking at other communities as well as Tallahassee, how they move through our project pipeline. Most of the ones that we talked about right now are between project development team and site selection to incentive development and company negotiation. There's still a lot of work to be done in those two areas right there, and that takes a significant amount of time. So, you know, you'll hear a lot too from Stephen today on how they help us with that lead generation and that company engagement. Now, one thing that we learned pretty rapidly with the onset of COVID-19 is, you know, we were seeing a lot of traction here, people looking to discover what is attractive about Tallahassee. And with the stopping of the travel, people and companies started looking at our community a little bit different and engaging in a different way. So building off of these great announcements that we've had locally and the synergy around Innovation Park and this area of our community, we worked with a local firm to highlight the assets in here to further push our Magnetic Capital of the World campaign. Drew's going to talk to you a little bit about that site selection and showcase a little video here today. I did want to highlight, though, when you look at our Magnetic Capital of the World campaign, not only is that gaining traction with company recruitment, but also here locally. Last year we worked with Deep on their electromagnetic bitter beer in honor of the Mag Lab. They actually came to us this year, said that they would like to be part to do it again. Divvy Up is also working with us and Target Print and Mail. So again, something that's taken to drive company attraction is really starting to drive a local market here and find a local niche too. So it's kind of really neat to see that that pipeline for that that type of messaging out there in marketing. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Drew, and he's going to talk a little bit with you about our site selection process.
Thanks, Christina. Good morning, everybody. We are focused on site selection, bringing the site to the client, as it were. And to do so, we have a variety of mechanisms. And so one of these is a comprehensive real estate platform for Tallahassee Leon County. We recently held our first ever real estate roundtable with a majority of the local commercial brokers here to communicate these assets and how we're promoting them on the national and even the global scale. Currently, we have a online database. You can see the link there below the image that highlights all of our major institutional and private sector assets from a real estate perspective here in our community. And each one has a subset with a variety of information on the site. And we can also upload images. And what's really awesome is we can upload videos and virtual tours as well. And the idea is that if someone can't get on a plane, they can go there in an, you know, in a virtual format and get all the information they need. And what we've learned from the people who work in site selection is that decisions are being made before anyone steps foot on the site itself. And so we're really trying to be proactive and be ahead of the game with this type of recruitment efforts. And in keeping with highlighting some of our best assets, one of which is Innovation Park. So we work closely with Ron and his team to come up with a video to help highlight the amazing resource that is Innovation Park and how we portray it to our external audiences. This is, before I start the video, I'll just give you a preface. There's three videos. This is the high-level context-setting video for what is Innovation Park, where is it, and what's there. And then we've got two additional videos as well that show more of all the buildings, as well as some 3D renderings of what someone coming online, whether they wanted to build an advanced manufacturing facility, a research and development lab, or an office for a new headquarters. Like, we kind of show those different concepts, and all of them have been pre-approved to current standards from the city and county development standards. So we've got that, and we also have it broken down so we can share it on social media. But with all that being said, I will go ahead and play the video.
Known as North Florida's hub for world-class research and emerging technologies, Innovation Park is a dynamic and collaborative community. The research park sits just 25 miles from the Gulf Coast with port access points at Port Panama City, known as the Gulf Coast Gateway, and the Port of Jacksonville, the United States' newest port. With over 30 organizations ranging from preeminent university research facilities to specialty manufacturing companies, as well as state and federal government research facilities, Innovation Park is a global hotspot for cutting-edge science. Located on 208 acres of scenic woods and rolling hills in Northwest Florida, Innovation Park is optimally positioned within close proximity to the Tallahassee International Airport, the Florida Gulf and Atlantic Railroad, and major roadways including Interstate 10 and the local beltway, Capitol Circle. The local university campuses of Florida A&M University, Florida State University, and Tallahassee Community College, as well as the Florida State Capitol Complex, located in downtown Tallahassee, are less than 10 minutes away from the park. The Leon County Research and Development Authority oversees Innovation Park, which is comprised of properties owned by either the Leon County Research and Development Authority, Florida A&M University, Florida State University, or private entities. Innovation Park includes 17 buildings that house over 30 organizations and is home to several industry leaders and more than 13 centers of excellence. Innovation Park is home to the largest and highest powered magnet laboratory in the world, the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory, known as the MagLab. A staple of the park since 1993, the National Mag Lab houses many one-of-a-kind instruments and record holders, including the 45 Tesla magnet, in addition to many other tools that make cutting-edge science possible. As the world's leader in manufacturing oil-free centrifugal compressors, Danfoss is a prime example of a business that flourishes due to its close proximity to the FAMU FSU College of Engineering, National Mag Lab, in other nearby research institutions, and Tallahassee's community. It also serves to distinguish Tallahassee and Leon County as a competitive global research and development location. The future site of the North Florida Innovation Labs will include a new 40,000 square foot facility located on 3.5 acres in Innovation Park. The incubator will focus on helping hard science, high impact companies pioneer new technologies and continue to put the Tallahassee region at the forefront of innovation. As a major research hub located in Tallahassee, Leon County, Innovation Park fosters private innovative companies' creativity and growth. For more information on Innovation Park and other opportunities in our community, contact the Office of Economic Vitality today.
Great job.
Nice.
Yeah, very good, really good.
And we really want to thank Drew and Christina. They did a great job on this. This looks totally professional. And
yes.
Yep. Very well done.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Every time I see that video, I always think, oh, what a great community to go work for. So, you know, it's just, it does a really good job of highlighting our assets. And like Drew mentioned, there are three components of that video to target the company and where they are in different places throughout the development. So we're really looking forward to utilizing that and helping continue to make the argument why Tallahassee, and when you're looking at applied science and advanced manufacturing, why this area is the best. So I think this, so thank you for Ron and your team for your work, and Drew for taking leadership on that video. So now I'd like to introduce to you Steve Jast. He's the president and founder of ROI Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. And Stephen has spent the past 30 years in economic development as a site selection advisor, an incentive negotiator, and as an investment attraction advisor. As president of ROI, Stephen's worked with over 450 economic development organizations around the world to drive investment to their respective communities. And by working with him and his team, we have certainly been able to see how those investments pay off. You know, going from where people didn't think of Tallahassee as an opportunity to exploring more about that. And, you know, we've kind of only begun on this journey to continue to establish Tallahassee as the magnetic capital of the world. And I've really enjoyed working with Stephen, and we even had the opportunity to present at an International Economic Development Council about a year ago to talk about the great work in our partnership. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Steve. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Christina. It's a pleasure being here. Thank you so much to the board members, Christina, Drew, for inviting me to join you this morning. It's always a pleasure to talk with our clients and their boards and lend some transparency into the work that we're doing. So I guess, Christina, I'll go ahead and share my screen and get into the slide presentation. You all just bear with me for 2 seconds. Okay, so can everybody see the first slide here?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay, great. So I thought it would be a good idea to start off the presentation in advance of giving some of the specific numbers and KPIs and some of the accomplishments that we've shared together with Tallahassee OEV by sharing with you a little bit about our company, very little bit, and our general philosophy and some of the major pillars and building blocks that need to be in place to have an effective investment attraction and lead generation program. So the three pillars, as we mentioned them, or as we describe them, relate to marketing, positioning, and then these lend themselves to a data-supported strategy, which we then implement on behalf of our clients. So from a marketing perspective, it's very important that an economic development organization have an all-encompassing approach, which would include social, digital, traditional means of outreach. I'm sure as all of you know, at least for those of you who are my age, I'm pushing 52. Phone calling just doesn't work in the same way that it used to. It's very strange for me to now sort of look at my phone when somebody calls and says, "Oh, I wonder who would call me? Who would do such a personal thing as to dare phone me on my phone?" Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, it was the means of communication. So the way that we speak with companies and understand whether or not they have an expansion program, while it used to be exclusively by phone surveying with C-suite executives, we now warm them up with content, with different pieces about the region so that they can get a bit of understanding as to why we're approaching them. Of course, we need to know the who, the where, and the when. It's very important to execute a target industry analysis so that we know exactly who we want to be going after in terms of the industries that are best suited to be able to maximize a presence in Tallahassee based on the assets that are local there. It's very important then to have a keen eye and watch conversion ratios. And when we talk about conversion ratios, we talk about building a list of possible prospects, how they then convert into a general interest in the region, how they then convert into a meeting, how they convert into a site visit. And as these companies work through the funnel, as it relates to conversion ratios, we need to know which companies, based on their geographic location, size of company, industry they operate in, are converting. So it's very much a living and breathing program whereby we can see which companies, based on different criteria, are converting at the best rates, which aren't. And then we're always pivoting to make sure that we're adding more companies that correspond to the leads that are converting at the highest ratio. So this is what we talk about when we talk about analytics. And of course, it's always important to gather corporate intelligence such that we have an understanding if the company has an operation in Florida, if it's a foreign company, have they already expanded into the US and where and why. So this is one of the main building blocks to an effective lead generation program. The second is positioning, a benchmark assessment and value proposition, a workforce analysis, industry trends and market research, an analysis of development ready sites, clusters that are already on site, which ones are growing, which ones have the potential to grow. And then of course, where do we find matching clusters around the world that are also experiencing growth, such that we can encourage them to take a look at Tallahassee as a location for their next corporate expansion. A lot of that work was done wonderfully by Camoin and Associates, as well as Vision First Advisors, who put together some strategic documents and some industry trend and industry target analyses, which really lent themselves to a fast ramp up by our team, really because of the wonderful work that they did do under Christina's leadership before we came on board as the investment attraction consultants. So once we have our marketing ducks lined up and our positioning ducks lined up, we move into our data supported strategy. So we deploy a multi-touch outreach. So we reach out to our prospects based on using email, LinkedIn in-mail, phone calling, really as many methods as we possibly can to get the logo of the Tallahassee OEB under their noses and start the process of building some brand equity and some goodwill, try and send them some content that's relevant to them and how they can enhance their bottom line as a business by being in Tallahassee. We then gather our own business intelligence, and this relates to the company's possibility to expansion, and then we score them. And I'll get a bit more into that in a couple of minutes. We then schedule corporate calls. A corporate call for us isn't necessarily a phone call. We call a corporate call a meeting with a pre-qualified company. So once we reached out to them and we've ascertained an interest in expansion to the Southeast, to Florida, to the Tallahassee region, we then schedule an introductory meeting. And in that meeting, we further validate the company's interest in expansion, what kinds of information that they would require. We encourage them to come down for a site visit. And of course, all of this process is done very much hand in hand with the staff at the OEV. We like to consider ourselves an extension of the OEV team. Nothing that we do is done in a vacuum. And certainly it's been a wonderful collaboration to date. And I'll take you through some of the numbers in a few minutes. I know that we've all been, you know, any one of us who's been on the planet for the past year has heard about COVID. And I'm going to try and not say that word too many times. But we often get asked about the fundamentals of site selection and how that's changed in a COVID world. So obviously, a lot of the site selection decision-making process has forced pre-pandemic are doing a lot of their research and data finding online and then creating short lists of sites that have more interest to them. So it's very important that on a proactive basis, we reach out to those companies to make sure that we're not being omitted from any short lists. But with that being said, COVID or not COVID, the fundamental building blocks of the site selection process revolve around speed, risk, and money. So when we talk about speed, that comes down to a company's ability to secure the permits that they need, to get an operation once a decision has been made up and running as quickly as possible. As you might imagine, any corporation when they're in spending mode wants to limit spending as much as they can and get into a revenue generating mode. So sites that offer an expedited process, economic development organizations that can offer an expedited process will always fare very well. Risk. Every single site that a company will consider has inherent with it some kind of risk. Some have higher risk, some have lower risk. And it's really the job for us and working with the OEV to present a plan to mitigate against any kind of risk in expanding to Tallahassee. So we need to lower risk, we need to be fast and agile. And from a money perspective, of course, we can interpret money in two ways. Money in terms of, or three ways really. So money in terms of the capital outlay to get an operation up and running, any kind of incentives that may be available. And then of course, money, as we discussed a bit earlier, meaning the company can become revenue generating as quickly as possible. So with COVID, without COVID, companies are always going to want to take a very close look at these three sort of principal branches of the site selection process. So how exactly does ROI and the OEV work together? We have a four-phased approach. I won't take too much time going through all the detail here, but really what we're trying to illustrate is the fact that everything is done very much together. So every year what we do, it's called a project relaunch. We initially launched this project 2 years ago, but every year we like to sit back down and review our scope and deliverables, take a look at our key performance indicators, take a look at our prospects and nurturing strategy. You know, it's one thing to get in touch with the company. It's another thing to continue that dialogue and continue to nurture. The typical gestation period for a company that's considering an expansion from the moment they start the site selection analysis until shovels in the ground can be anywhere from 18 to 24 and as much as 36 months. So nurturing these companies, becoming a value-added advisor to them is extremely important during that time where they're now analyzing their final decisions as it relates to a final site. Recruitment zone analysis, where are we going to be recruiting companies from? And there's different criteria that we use for that. We write an annual business plan. Of course, we provide access to our CRM so that the folks at the OEV can get real-time analytics on the program. Those are the analytics we talked about a couple of slides ago. And of course, in-person orientation and stakeholder interviews, you know, when that's possible. So phase two, we then move into our intelligence gathering. So we build what's called a TCPL, a targeted company prospect list. We do that by subscribing to a number of proprietary databases. We send that list to the OEV for vetting. We want to make sure that we're not talking to companies that the OEV may already be in discussion with. We don't want to talk to companies that maybe they've already talked to and there is no longer an interest to expand into the region. And then we start the process, once the list is approved, of reaching out to these companies. So again, we use a multi-touch approach. And once we are finally able to get through to companies, we score them in what's called a BANT process. So BANT stands for budget, authority, need, and timeline. So were we able to ascertain a budget for a potential expansion? Did we speak with a person in a position of authority? Is there a need to be in Florida and the northern part of Florida? And of course, T for timeline. Is there a timeline for the project? If we're able to acquire favorably all of the BANT criteria, we then rank this company very highly for an introductory meeting. And we have a staff member by the name of Ben Coleman, who will then talk with Drew, prepare for that introductory meeting, make sure that we're bringing all the best information to that introductory meeting. And then of course, present the region in its most favorable light. And with the hopes that we'll get an RFI, request for information, and that we'll move the company through the funnel in collaboration with the OEV, constantly nurturing, sending relevant information, such that the company ultimately comes for a site visit. In different times, we would also participate in trade shows and trade missions. That's less possible, so we've been forced to further digitize this process and hold virtual meetings as we're doing right now. Ultimately, I think we'd like to be doing face-to-face meetings. And then we deploy best practice nurturing. So we're always, again, trying to make sure that the OEV logo, our interest, is under our leads' noses, not in an aggressive way, but in a very helpful way to make them understand that we're here to help them. And sort of the philosophy that you want to use while you're nurturing is that we are a value-added advisor who just wants to help the company with their expansion. Now, of course, we want that to be in Tallahassee, but to sort of acquire the status of a value-added advisor, you're really there to help them with whatever information that they want. We want to become the go-to person. And as we are the go-to person, of course, we're constantly gently nudging them towards Tallahassee. So there's a standardized protocol to ensure a follow-up with the OEV, and that includes, again, the RFI, request for information, scheduling, participating in joint calls with stakeholders, site visits, ongoing facilitation, updating data into the CRM and call report updates. And then, of course, the handoff. Ultimately, there comes a point where when a company's ready for a site visit and they're ready to talk about specifics in the project and specific costs and any potential fiscal and financial incentives and permitting and building, that's the kind of competency skill sets that we don't necessarily possess at the level of the OEV, most obviously. And so at that point, we need to work much more closely together, which we do. Christina, should I stop here for a quick question? Just keep motoring through? Yeah, okay. No, I don't see anybody raising their hand, so I guess I'll just keep going. So what are our industry targets? Big surprise, the major industry target is magnetic technology. And then we also have industry targets that are all married to or linked to some extent, to magnetic technology. So this includes 3D printing, 3D printing related to advanced composites and biomedical applications, advanced robotics and sensors, green energy, a bit to a lesser extent, battery technology, industry 4.0, and our geographic focus has been primarily North America and EMEA. And so obviously Europe, Middle East. For the Middle East, there's really been more of an emphasis on Israel, where there are a lot of very advanced high technology companies working in the magnetic technology field. So we've had quite a bit of success there. So our engagement with the OEV is on a 3-year program. So I'll give you some of the basic results and performance indicators for year one, for year two, and then consolidated together. So we basically started from a standing position as it relates to lead generation and investment attraction, which is good because it gave us an opportunity to write our own story and to work very closely with the OEV. You know, one of the nice things about Tallahassee is that it probably wasn't as well a known commodity as other communities around the US. And so that, again, really gave us an opportunity to write our own story. You know, I used to always tell Christina, you know, having no reputation is far better than having a bad reputation. And it gives us an opportunity to build that reputation. So in year one, we built a list of 1,200 targeted companies, and we reached out to them. And as a result, we were able to schedule 50 meetings, 50, with companies who scored highly in our BANT ranking. And of those 15 companies, 15 we call pipeline, 14 we call nurture. So a nurture meeting is when a company requests a follow-up, they wanna talk again. So of those 50 initial conversations, 14 came back for a variety of reasons. 7 of them were interested in a potential site visit for 2020. We had 2 site visits in our first year. And we also generated 15 pipeline opportunities. So pipeline opportunities when a company says to us something like, great that you called, there could be something in the works, give me a call back in 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. So we consider that to be a pipeline opportunity. We continued our effort in year two. We're constantly adding companies so that we always have a minimum of 1,200 to speak with. So we added probably a couple of hundred going from year one to year two. In year two, we were able to schedule 64 new meetings with new potential investors. We also had an additional 15 nurture meetings, again, with companies that we could have met in year one who we're now following up with, or companies that we met at a certain point in year two that wanted to follow up. We also secured an additional 30 pipelines, which is a very nice way to enter into year three, knowing that there's another 30 companies that have an interest to meet with us. We had 3 potential site visits alone in year two, and we also signed 2 non-disclosure agreements and 1 memorandum of understanding with companies who wanted to take the next step as it relates to learning more about investing in the Tallahassee region. So on a consolidated basis, the funnel to date, which I think really heading into 2021 shows great promise. So as I mentioned before, we're constantly topping up our TCPL, targeted company prospect list, such that there's a minimum of 1,200 companies. So to date, we've had about 1,600 companies that we've reached out to. Again, hard focus on magnetics and imaging, secondary focus on advanced materials and robotics. So we have 150 plus companies to nurture at various stages of our pipeline. We had 114 initial meetings with qualified leads in those first 2 years. We have 45 pipeline opportunities, meaning companies that have an interest who would like to re-engage with us either in the next month, 2 months, 3 months. And again, we have our two NDAs and one MOU. So from a standstill position, being in this business for the amount of time that I've been in, having gone through a couple of years unlike any other, with a change of administration, with COVID, these are just fantastic results. And I give all the credit in the world to Drew and Christina. They've been wonderful partners to work with. We've changed at some points and experimented with different kinds of companies, different geographic regions. And really, OEV has just been a tremendous partner to work with, always open to new ideas, and highly engaged. And I can tell you, having been in this business for so long, the only way that you're going to really get success here is to treat this as a marathon. As Christina always says, it's not a sprint. We need to have full alignment between us and the OEV, and not just us and the OEV, but full alignment amongst all the stakeholders who play such an important role in helping to drive job creating investment into the region. And there has been wonderful alignment. So for this coming year, from a strictly KPI perspective, again, we'll have a list of a fresh 1,200 companies to reach out to. We are planning on a minimum of 30 first-time meetings with companies. We hope that these will generate another 15 companies to nurture. And that doesn't take into consideration the companies that we already have to nurture, the 45 plus the NDAs and the MOU. So we've built some really nice momentum. Obviously, at this point, we probably should have had over 10 site visits, but given the complexities of the coronavirus, it's been difficult to make those happen. But I think that once the virus starts to ebb, we'll be in a really, really good position to have a great number of companies come to the park and come to the region. And hopefully that will be able to happen very soon. And in the meantime, we will continue to build on and add to the pipeline. So we talked a little bit about COVID. Again, I'm making a concerted effort not to, you know, to talk about it for the 1,000,000th time. But we can't deny the fact that it had a role. Calling companies and asking them if they're considering capital intensive expansion projects in the heat of a once in a 100-year pandemic is not an easy feat. So the results that we were able to generate over the past couple of years, I think, speak to the great business plan and forward planning that Vision First and Camoyne put together and that we're able to generate with Drew and Christina. Which gives me tremendous optimism and really makes me wonder how successful we would have truly been had these unfortunate circumstances not come to bear. I think that under normal circumstances, given the assets in place, that the Tallahassee region is really primed and ripe for significant investment. So a couple of really easy numbers to take a quick look at to further frame what we're talking about here. Global FDI is to remain weak throughout 2021. Between January and November of 2020, between January and November of 2019 versus January, November 2020, foreign investors announced 33.6% fewer projects. So that's significant. What we also noticed for the first time in 7 years is that reshoring jobs out created or how should I, there's probably a more elegant way for me to say that, reshoring created more jobs in 2020 than greenfield FDI for the first time in 7 years. So again, that just kind of goes to show you how COVID is causing companies to reevaluate their supply chains, reevaluate their offshore manufacturing, bringing some home. And obviously, given the pandemic, fewer and fewer companies outside of cross-border M&A were hesitant to really execute any significant cross-border investment in the forms of bricks and mortar and job creation. M&A is a different story. M&A was relatively healthy as a means for FDI investment. So we're seeing a lot more reshoring. We have a new administration in place now. President Biden has signed a number of executive orders that will change how people do business in the states over the course of his administration, from renewable energy, canceling the Keystone XL project, his Buy American First policies, some of the policies he's put in place through executive order for employee safety at the workplace and so forth. So again, we'll need to see how those things shake out and to what extent they may play a role or not in our investment attraction, but certainly we're keeping a very close eye on that. Companies are reimagining their supply chains. I don't know that that's gonna be extremely relevant to what we're doing here in Tallahassee. Companies are also, when they talk about supply chains, the notion of just-in-time manufacturing, I think, is going to become less and less prevalent. I think we're gonna start seeing manufacturers keep far more robust inventories of critical goods and materials that they need for their manufacturing. There's gonna be a much greater importance put on last mile distribution. So these are all the ways, and of course, digitization and e-commerce. So again, these are ways that I think we're gonna see the world change. I don't know to what extent that's gonna really affect the work that we're doing at the OEV, but nonetheless, we'll keep an eye on that. The digitization of industry and particularly of economic development. So whereas it's going to become difficult to do a site visit, it's so wonderful to see that the OEV put together these great videos, because we need to somehow in some way get these potential investors in a more visceral way in front of the assets that make Tallahassee and the Tallahassee region such a wonderful place to invest. So that's gonna need to be done by virtual reality tours, by video, and other ways. And of course, when we talk about the digitization of industry, when we hear a lot about companies repatriating parts of their manufacturing operations, reshoring, nearshoring, China plus one, the piece where companies will want to bring manufacturing back to the US is going to call for a significant amount of digitization to offset the labor costs where they are significantly lower. Not significantly, the labor costs from China and the US, that gap has been closing, but nonetheless, there will be some need for some development in advanced manufacturing, digitization to make US manufacturing competitive from a cost perspective, if indeed it will be reshored. What we're hearing on a positive note when we're talking to companies, I would say 6-7 months ago, it was just pure uncertainty. You talk to a company about a potential expansion project and we'd ask, when will that project take place? And there was just no answer. We don't know. It's impossible to predict. You'll have to call us back. Today, I would say over the course of the past month or so, companies are again talking about specific timeframes. We are going to do this project in 6 months, and 9 months, and 14 months. So we're getting fewer and fewer of the I just have no idea to an actual timeframe for implementation of an expansion project. So that's very positive. And from another, you know, very positive point of view is the establishment of the North Florida Innovation Labs Incubator. I think that the incubator is going to add to the already wonderful assets in place. Incubators are just a fantastic way to help build on clusters that you're trying to develop, ultimately shut down some of the leakage in those industry clusters. It's going to help drive innovation. It's going to help drive partnership with large industries. And large companies who may see some of the technology being developed at the incubator is interesting and may want to partner with those companies, commercialize the technology that's being developed. companies like to be near like companies. So once the incubator starts to fill up, I think that's just going to be, excuse the pun, a magnet for other like companies to come to the region. So I'm super excited about the incubator, particularly as another reason to try and point companies towards Tallahassee. So that concludes my part of the presentation, and certainly I would be more than happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Stephen. I just wanted again thank the LCRDA for your support. It is, you know, us all working together again, you know, as you've seen through both presentations, that really help build the magnetic capital of the world. From your partnership to the leadership at the city and the county and our university systems and the talent pipelines, and our community college, TCC, and Lively, all of that plays a big role into how we can continue to work together to diversify our economy. And, you know, when Stephen talked to you today about his pipeline and how he's helping us, and you looked at our competitive pipeline, you know, where his ends, ours begins. And this is just, you know, one targeted sector of our applied sciences and manufacturing that we're talking about today. So with that, I'd like to, you know, Stephen and I would be happy to take any questions that you may have.
I would say great presentation, board members, questions or comments that you have right now.
Thank you.
Oh, you're recognized.
This is Shante.
Okay, yeah, Dr. Friday-Stroud, yes, please proceed, and then after that, Kevin.
Okay, thank you. I know that you all were talking about kind of the, if you could give a little more clarity around how the communications takes place, because I heard in Stephen's presentation where he said you kind of make sure Christina and her team are not having communications with them, and then you all work to together to figure that piece out. If you all could just give a little more you know, clarity around kind of how those activities take place, because I think that, you know, it's really good just trying to figure out you know, how that happens.
Absolutely. It began, like we talked about, communication is key. And when you look at our applied technologies and advanced manufacturing pipeline, working with ROI to do that lead generation, initial company engagement and nurturing on our pipeline is key. And to be able to make sure we're not on top of each other, weekly calls or biweekly calls are held to trade information and making sure that we're all on the same page as we build that pipeline together.
Great, thanks.
And Kevin?
Christina, thank you. Stephen, I appreciate your presentation. It was a huge amount of information. So far, it sounds like you guys have reached out to 1,600 companies, and that in this coming year, you have identified another 1,200 companies. Inside the funnel, so far the funnel has produced one MOU, and I would assume that some of the original 1,600 still have opportunities to go through the funnel. What is the depth of field? If we have 1,600 and another 1,200, that's 2,800. How much depth of field is there?
You know, it's a great question, you know, and it's always very difficult to prognosticate. You know, I'd like to think that we would at least be able to replicate the effort of last year. So we have two NDAs, one MOU, a number of site visits. So I would hope that over the course of the next year, at a very minimum, we would be able to generate between 5 to 10, because this works on a cumulative basis, another 5 to 10 site visits, another 2 to 4 MOUs and NDAs, just based on the regular flow of business and the results that we've been seeing over the course of the first 2 years, compounded by the fact that I think we'll see an ease in some of the COVID restrictions and some of the anxiety around traveling and so forth.
Great,
Yeah, and then Kevin, you got a great point, which is, you know, why our relationship works so well. When you look at that big funnel of all those projects, having ROI take the time and cultivate through those to find out which ones are best positioned for that introductory conversation. And then, you know, that continuing nurturing of that client is very important.
You know, thanks, Christina. You know, the OVE, I'm sure in different ways acquires their own leads that walk in, right? They go on the website, they have an interest and they just walk in the door. For us, we're really what we call intercept selling. So we're trying to call companies who may have not already considered Tallahassee, who may not have already considered Florida. So in an intercept environment, it's a lot more difficult and the process is much longer because you're really educating them from a standstill. Once a lead comes through another channel directly to the Office of Economic Vitality, they've already probably done a lot of the due diligence and a lot of the research, and they've already deleted a number of potential sites. So for us, it's a much longer and a relationship that's built on what I call this value-added advisor. So, hey, you've got a project, you know, you're looking at the Southeast, you're looking at Alabama, you're looking at Mississippi, you're looking at Georgia, you haven't looked at Florida. Is there a reason for that? Do you have any preconceived notions as to why your project wouldn't work in Florida? Are you familiar with what's happening in Tallahassee with the MagLab and some of their assets that are in place? And then you get these companies who say, well, you know what, we haven't. And then, you know, you have to ask a company who is at a certain stage of their site selection decision-making process and moving through that to kind of take a couple of steps backwards and consider a new site. So it's a far more sort of sales intensive, information intensive process on the intercept sell versus, you know, a company that raises their hand and says, I'm interested in being in Tallahassee. And that's where the collaboration with Drew and Christine and her team becomes very important to be able to feed those companies the information that they need such that, you know, you wet their whistle so they want to take another look and another look. So that's why there's typically a meeting, a nurturing meeting, a number of nurturing, you know, documents, a site visit, because we really are starting from scratch with that individual company. It's very rare that they reach out to us. We're always, you know, introducing the concept to the company and why they should be there, how it would enhance their top line, how it would enhance their bottom line. So it takes a little while sometimes for those big companies to, you know, change route and digest the information that we send them.
Again, a lot of good information. I think we have time for a couple more questions. Kristen, I know that you have one as well.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Great presentation, and forgive me for one question for Christina first. I have generated a lot of questions here, but if we're going to have time to talk about ROI and the similar subjects at an OEV meeting, some of my questions probably are better for that meeting than for Innovation Park. So, do you think we're going to have that opportunity in the future?
Commissioner, should it be the will of the IA board, we'd be happy to have that conversation with you.
Thank you. Hans, I think this would be a fantastic conversation to have at the OEV board. So, Stephen, I am on the Leon County Commission. I've served on Innovation Park Board for 10 years, so I've got a foot kind of in both worlds here. So specifically focused on Innovation Park, the North Florida Innovations Labs, I'm glad you focused on the benefit of the incubator for recruitment and retention and building that cluster or several clusters perhaps. I assume that we're gonna be continually updating the information that you may have and OEV may have about the labs and the progress we make in the next year to 2 years, so that you have kind of real-time updates to let those companies know the status and to expand on the information about potential programs or companies that are associated with those programs. Is that, am I on the right track there? Kind of,
yeah.
Continually that information?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Having that incubator as an asset and adding additional assets into our community further strengthens our ability to compete for competitive projects, to remain competitive, and to also, most importantly, keep talent and retain talent here and grow our entrepreneurial ecosystem. So the incubator closes a big gap here in the North Florida area, and we're really looking forward to building on that synergy to not only attract larger companies, but also to retain talent here.
I think, great answer. I think more specifically, if Michael has new clients coming into the labs program while we're under construction, that could give you more talking points. Let prospects know. So that ongoing messaging about the North Florida Innovation Labs will continue to evolve. It won't be just focused on the lab is coming, right? It'll be the specifics.
Absolutely. And a great case in point in that, Commissioner, was the project that we just talked about when Dan Foss made their big announcement about their third expansion here in our community in the past, 5 to 6 years, we're able to showcase that, that innovation and manufacturing is alive here in Tallahassee, and it's caused one or two companies to look more at what they can do here beyond just those researches. And the same type would go for any other success stories or landing stories that would occur before the incubator is completed and or throughout that timeline.
Okay. So thank you for that. One last question, Madam Chair. I really noted your comments. But or if this may benefit us in the future to have a conversation about how other research parks partner with their EDOs to do this kind of marketing. I know this works very different in some regions of the country, and we have benefited from that experience in building OEV. Christina's done a fantastic job, and her team and site selection, everything are part of those lessons learned. So as we go forward, are there any things that are standing out to you now that you see at other research parks that might work and help expand this relationship, or are we really on the right track for where we are at this moment?
I'm gonna let Stephen answer that question, because of course I'm gonna say we're on the right track.
Of course we're on the right track. Fortunately, I provided some training on marketing and business development at the AURP conferences, and we were also contracted by the AURP to provide training to their membership on investment attraction and so forth. So I think generally speaking, most innovation parks work very much hand in hand with the local economic development organization. Most of the innovation parks will have a business economic development liaison who I think is out in the field making people aware of the park and different companies that may be interested in providing funding to the park. But I think by and large, in the experience that I've had, the economic development, the local economic development organization typically takes the lead in looking for companies that want to come to the region. And then if the innovation park makes sense for that company, an introduction is made and the innovation park is brought into the conversation. So that typically is the model that I've seen, where the local EDO has within its portfolio of assets to market the innovation park.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you.
And I know, Ron, you have a final question if there aren't any more from our board. Ron?
Yeah. Just curious, what kind of feedback have you received from prospects specifically about Innovation Park and then what, in addition to the North Florida Innovation Labs, what can we do to better position ourselves to be attractive to those prospects? For Stephen in particular.
Sure. Initially, people did not know very much about Tallahassee Innovation Park. They did not know about the Mag Lab. They did not know about the positioning as a magnetic capital of the world. So, I alluded to it a bit earlier in my presentation, having no reputation is better than having a bad reputation. So people came to the table, to the conversation with a very open mind. And for the most part, once we're able to educate them on the assets that are there and some of the activities, particularly by Danfoss, there was a tremendous amount of interest. And because we have signed NDAs and MOU, I can't really share, I'm not sure, Christina, what I can and can't share, but there are some very large multinational corporations who have taken a keen interest in learning more about having an operation in the park, and I hope that those come to fruition. And the goal was always year one to get things ramped up, year two to start relationships, and year three to see some project activity. And I'm still hopeful for that, despite the difficulties that we've had over the past year, which nobody could have predicted. So how can we promote the park better? Well, we live in a digital world. And I think that any organization that wants to take its marketing, and we're talking about marketing, a large part of every economic development organization's job is marketing. It's lead generation. It's trying to attract companies. So as many different routes and channels that an organization can deploy in support of their lead generation activities will only work to their benefit. So is there a marketing automation platform where we can send, automated nurturing messages with customized messages to companies at the industry level? Do we have the staff necessary to continuously come back to these companies? Because right now it's not really, it's not a huge resource taker, the nurturing function, because there's only about 115 or so companies that need to be nurtured. But when it comes to the point where after a couple more years, you have 200-300 companies who are in the funnel, there's a couple of hundred companies who want to follow up, it's going to be very difficult for Christina and Drew to keep up with that kind of demand. And so you're going to need to start thinking about some different automation techniques, some different digital techniques, and the world is going digital. So for example, the video that you produce, that needs to go on LinkedIn, that needs to go on Facebook. We need to start building audiences on LinkedIn based on the personas that we're chasing as potential investors in the park and start sending messaging to them. So there's a host of modern economic development marketing techniques in the digital world, budget permitting, because posting these ads require media buys. They're not terribly expensive. As far as I'm concerned, that's kind of the next big thing, is really for economic development groups to become very aggressive in the digital world and work to start having companies raise up their hand. Because the best lead you're ever going to get is a company that comes to you, right? As opposed to us intercepting them. So the more money and effort that we can put out into the world such that companies start coming back to us, well, that will be a huge boost to the investment attraction effort.
Thank you.
That was a critical question as we talk about the preparation and all. Are there other comments or questions from the board? Great. Thank you again, Christine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa, you're a wonderful resource and we appreciate all of your effort as well. So thank you guys.
Thank you. Well, we love working with your group, and it's just been a pleasure. So thank you so much for inviting me today. It was nice to meet you all and talk about our passion, which is investment attraction. And if ever, for myself, it's an open invitation. If anybody wants to chat about this, or if you'd like me to join another forum to discuss this in more detail, it really would be my pleasure.
Well, thank you for that invitation. We'll certainly take you up on it. I love the marketing and communication piece of it. So we'll certainly reach out on that, and we want to do our part in this relationship. So thank you all. And certainly you can stay on, enjoy the party with us, or you can go back and connect with the rest of your day. But we do appreciate you again.
I think I'll let you get on with your business of the day. I'll leave here now. So enjoy the great weather. I was talking to Christina and she was saying it was nice. I'm not sure what it's like today, but here where I am, it's about 2 feet of snow. So try and get outside and enjoy a little bit. So have a great rest of your meeting, everybody, and be well, stay healthy, and we'll talk real soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye,
Neil. Okay, we will. Item number 7, which again goes to the approval of draft for meetings December 1 and December 18th. Is there a motion? I trust that everybody's had an opportunity to review them.
I'll move it.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
It's been properly motioned and second the approval of the minutes for meetings December 1 and December 18th. All in agreement, please acknowledge with the sign aye.
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 Got you counted. Opposition? Motion. Okay, we have our consent agenda before us. Are there any changes, additions, or subtractions? Otherwise, I will entertain a motion.
Okay. John Daly, move consent.
We got you, Mayor. Absolutely. So we have the motion and second for approval of the consent agenda. All in favor, acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition?
Aye.
I think it went with the other. Motion carries. Okay. Well, we will jump into the rest of our agenda moving aggressively. So that's item 9, our OEB Memorandum of Understanding. And Ron, if you'll walk us through that, sir.
Madam Chair, the staff request approval of the attached MOU reflecting OEB's commitment of $2,500,000 in matching funds for the Economic Development Administration grant for the Design Construction North Florida Innovation Labs. The MOU, even upon approval of this board, is subject to the approval of the Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency Board of Directors. Happy to entertain any questions about the document.
You're recognized, Kristen.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to thank Ron, I'm sure you, Madam Chair, and Melissa, whomever else was involved in this. I know it's been a lot of work, and this is a pretty big day. It's taking a lot of steps moving forward, so I'll make the motion to approve.
Absolutely. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Conversation, question? Okay. It's been properly motioned and second. The approval of the OEB Memorandum of Understanding. All those in favor, acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition, then motion carries on that.
John,
you're not opposing, right? You're just delayed, right?
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay, so motion carries with no opposition. So there we go. Next, we'll move into RFQ 20-01 Architect Services Agreement. Ron?
Madam Chair, first I want to thank Mary Jo Spector, who has helped tremendously in putting this contract together. She's been a valuable resource, as well as the RFQ committee, Tom Allen, Kristen Dozier, and Mary Jo Spector, who went through the process of selection. So with that, we have presented to the committee, to the board, as the committee's first choice, Architects Lewis and Whitlock. And the committee directed staff to negotiate an agreement in accordance with the process that's laid out in statute, as well as the EDA grant requirements. The committee requests approval of that selection of Architects Lewis and Whitlock, and staff requests approval of the attached agreement negotiated with Architects Lewis and Whitlock. And that agreement is consistent with the RFQ, using standard AIA form, American Institute of Architects form document. And it's also consistent with the project budget and the associated EDA funding requirements.
Again, thank everyone for their hard work on that. Mary Jo, Tom, Kristen, for your leadership on that. Is there conversation, or are we prepared to move forward with a motion?
I will make the motion.
I'll second.
Okay, very good. Rightfully so.
One comment.
Comment, absolutely, you're recognized.
Because of the cone of silence during the negotiation phase after our committee meeting, this is my first opportunity, Cam, to say fantastic job. I'm really glad that we had out-of-town and in-town firms or local firms compete for this, but I think it shouldn't be lost on any of us that a local firm was the top because of your experience, experience with TCC had a big role in that. And this is just extremely exciting to move forward. And I'm really proud of the team you brought together. So thank you for that. Mary Jo, I know you're just continuing to work and will continue to work with us. So thank you for that. But this is just a long time coming. And I think we've got the right team to move forward.
Well, we absolutely accept that recommendation. But we have our motion and our second. All those in favor, please acknowledge with aye in terms of acceptance.
Aye.
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 Is there any? Okay, motion carries at 100%. And I know we do have our, is that Cam that's represented on there? Cam, would you like to offer any comments as we move down this first leg of the journey?
Oh, no, I was just going to, you know, we are extremely excited and honored, and I appreciate the kind words from Kristen, and we're just looking forward to getting started. We have an aggressive schedule. We're slated to get started next week. Been working with Ron to put the meetings together for next Thursday, and we're ready to hit the ground running.
Well, we appreciate your investment of time, and we look forward to this partnership. So thank you very much on that. And Anne, you have a comment.
Thank you, Kim. I just wanted to say you answered my question, when does it start? So.
Excellent.
Cam, you have an aggressive partner here in the way of this board. We're all ready for it to be done. So thank you on that. And I know, Ron, we had to our agenda, and that was the Oversight Committee.
I also want to thank Melissa and her team.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
They did a lot of work on this contract. And what was really nice is that her firm was able to bring in a specialist, someone who does this for a living with these kind of construction, architect, and engineering contracts. And I expect we'll probably be using them on the next set of contracts with the construction contractors. So,
that's great.
Thanks, Melissa.
We would certainly not be able to do it without Melissa. So we appreciate her all the time. Yes.
So, yes, on the next item, this was the addition to the agenda, the North Florida Innovation Labs Oversight Committee. So as we were discussing how to move forward with this and to be able to handle this tight time frame that we're working on, we wanted to create a structure that would allow for the maximum amount of input into the process from subject matter experts, as well as to have a subset of the board authorized to provide oversight over the project. And be able to do it in very short notice without some of the other issues that we deal with. It will still be a sunshine committee. It will still be noticed appropriately. It will still be recorded in minutes and all of those things. But to have a small group of three people who can react to those approvals that are needed and just to provide the kind of direction that we need in the project. In addition to this committee charter that I'm asking you to consider, we are also creating a small group, a working group of myself, Michael Tetnowski, and Mary Jo Spector to lead the programming and design input side. And we will be pulling in others as needed. In particular, we're going to start with the North Florida Innovation Labs advisory group that Michael has put together so well. It's a group of about 9 folks that encompasses, and if you go onto the innovation-park.com website /infill, you can get to that list, but it includes folks from the offices of commercialization at FAMU and FSU. It includes representation from the Florida Technology Council, from the Jim Rand School of Entrepreneurship, just a lot of great folks who are going to continue to provide these advisory services to Michael as he continues to develop the programs at that, and they also serve as the sort of the admissions advisor to any firm that gets into the incubator. So just so you see, we sort of have a robust way of looking at this and providing that control and oversight. The committee charter that I provided is specifically for the infill oversight committee, which is the members, 3 members, of which we've already had 3 volunteers. Chris Dozier and Tom Allen, who served on the RFQ committee and are already intimately familiar with that part of the process, have volunteered, as has Kevin Graham. Mary Jo, since she is not part of the board, but will continue to provide services through the advisory group, we thought more appropriate for her to stay separated in that way. So this is the recommended charter. The charter provides and delegates all of the necessary authority to deal with the kinds of things that come up in a construction process, all to be done within the confines of the approved budget. Anything outside of that would have to come back to the board, obviously, for approval. But.
Well, Ron, I want to say thank you for your diligence on this. We recognize that we need to be expedient in this process, and we need to set a structure up that supports that. So with that said, we have the action item before us. Is there a motion?
Excuse me.
Is this committee designed to dissolve at completion or to be end of construction? Or does it have a life expectancy somewhere doing something quite different or different beyond construction completion?
It is specifically to provide oversight of the design and construction.
Okay.
So nothing beyond that.
It automatically dies upon completion of the...
this project?
Yes.
Great question, Dave. Thank you for that. Okay, are there other questions? If not, then...
I had a question.
Absolutely, you're recognized, Monday.
Hello?
Recognized.
Okay. I know that I heard our Office of Commercialization in there. And that'll be fine, but I know sometimes Keith's shop works on that kind of stuff as well. So just wanted to know that FAM could come in that way as well.
And we are not limited to that group, but that's just sort of the initial group. And we are having a meeting next Thursday with this sort of a kickoff meeting with the design team and this group as well. We're also bringing in some other folks that have specific skills, particularly like Rob Parsons, who knows about prototype development. We're bringing in, have invited Jason Robotham and Eric Graven, who both are entrepreneurs with Wet Lab related businesses. So yeah, we're gonna reach out to whoever we think is appropriate to help us with their particular subject matter expertise.
You're right. Chime in. Does that answer your question? You're good.
Yeah, because I mean, I was thinking about them. I was also thinking about our architecture department with the robotics piece in it as well. But I'm sure I'll get with our commercialization people to make sure they're included.
Okay, thank you. And then Kristen,
just to clarify, I mean, I think you already said this wrong, but the that work group and the advisory group that you're going to bring in from Northport Innovation, but also any others that you might bring in, that's really focused on programming, right? Space requirements, the equipment, technology, other things that companies may need. These are special advisors who know what we need to put in the building that will allow us to make those architectural decisions as we go forward.
Correct. That's the intent, yes.
Okay. This is really the meat on the bone that we've been looking for so long. So I'm really excited about this approach because, I mean, I think you shared with the board, but the EDA kind of working with a board like ours that's under Sunshine and the public RFP process all of those steps is a little different than how some EDA recipients can work very nimbly. I mean, even another public institution like TCC. So I think this gets us in that right posture to meet our schedule, but also stay within our rules about Sunshine and other things.
Yeah, and be so inclusive at that. Yeah. And you're right.
I think you anticipated these are still all Sunshine meetings of these two groups?
Not both groups.
Okay.
So, and that's one of the reasons we don't have board members in the other group. Okay, for this advisory group.
Okay.
It is strict, and those are just subject matter experts who will help, as she said, with the programming and design of the building.
It may be helpful, Ron, I'm sorry, if you reflect on our past work group. I mean, I'm not going to get this exactly right, but there's a decision-making authority that happens within a Sunshine group, and the advisory, the work group, they will be making, you know, suggestions, but they're not decision-making. Is that the distinction?
Well, and in particular, the actual design of the building is not something that would come before the board for approval. Mm-hmm. I mean, the board has approved the basic concept of what goes into the building, but you don't have to go and approve every step of the way what the final design looks like. I mean, certainly we're going to bring that to the board, but it's not a requirement that you approve it.
Okay, and but if I can just rephrase, I don't think I asked my actual question. I absolutely understand what you're saying. In terms of this advisory group, which sounds like a pretty big non-board group, where will those meetings occur? I assume anybody can go and listen if they want to, but maybe not?
Maybe not.
Okay.
Again, it is not a Sunshine group. It's not.
I get that. Yeah. But is there a reason why anybody couldn't come and listen to it if they felt like?
Other than COVID, we're going to have this first meeting next week virtually.
Right. Other than COVID, is there any reason why
To listen? No, I don't think so. Cam, do you have any input on that?
No, I have no problem with anyone listening in. I think that the idea is just that we're reaching out to specialists in the various components of the building to help make decisions and guide the project so that we outfit it with everything that you need. So I think we're just trying to be nimble and move quickly.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, the last thing I would want to do is introduce any process that slowed anything down. But if you have an advisory group that is making no decisions, they are a true advisory group, and you're able at some point to say, well, anybody could have come to these meetings who wanted to, I think that's a good thing to be able to do. It doesn't mean that they get to talk. It doesn't mean that they get to participate, nor does it mean that you have to advertise them. So I would make that distinction.
Yeah, I just, my biggest concern is that we get into a situation where we have board members showing up and you have.
No, that would be apart from board members.
Yeah, okay.
Apart from board
members. Good clarification. Kevin.
So actually, my comment was a clarification of that specific point. Are the oversight committee and, for that matter, any board members restricted from being at those meetings in a listening capacity?
Well, and I think that might be one from Melissa, but before she responds, I'll give you my opinion. And this is kind of the way we deal with all other board member interactions, is there's a presumption that when two board members are in the same room together, there's an opportunity for them to be talking about business that could potentially come before the board. That's the big concern.
Correct.
So if this advisory group should stray down that path and you're in a position to be talking to each other about some issue that they're talking about, then that could be a potential problem. But beyond that, I don't know if Melissa has any other insight into that.
Sorry, it takes a minute to unmute. No, I agree with you, Ron, and I guess I would add, you know, and this is probably pretty obvious, but in the same room means, you know, if we're attending via Zoom or on a phone or, you know, some other capacity that relates to the official meeting. So I think I agree with the recommendation to avoid having board members at the meeting.
Yes, Kristen, you're recognized.
I'm just wondering, based on Kevin, you and Ann's comments and questions here, there's a balance here. I mean, we are a public organization. We want a lot of input. We want access to what's happening, but also we need to be nimble. And I kind of see the work group as a process that private sector, others, that Cam, you might go through with a group of stakeholders as you program. You know, if you're working with FSU, you might talk to a lot of different stakeholder groups to start programming a particular building. I'm wondering if something kind of in the middle here might be a bi-week, I assume you're going to be taking notes on this, Ron, so I don't want to load up anything extra on your list either. I'm going to caveat it. But a quick update to the board every few weeks or something like that. This is kind of the status of that work group. High level, we're talking about these issues. And that would be a public document if you sent it to the board members. So that might be a way to bring that general information into the public space. We know what's happening, but still keep it as nimble as it needs to be. I may not be addressing any of the concerns here. I thought I was picking up on that wanting more access, wanting more engagement, and yet we have this process that kind of limits that.
So I guess my main point would be, are we looking to just have the information as information sake, realizing that we're not the subject matter experts in those areas and that he's convening those. And so, you know, general updates that Ron provides, not necessarily to kind of dig down in the weeds and say, hey, well, I read here that, you know, this comment was this and I don't think we need to put that there in that corner. I don't think we're looking to drill it down to that level, but is it just awareness that we want about what's being said, who we're engaged?
So I think so. And I'm fully confident that Ron is going to be able to lead this process. There's a lot of intricacy to it. But when you look at the second point on the provisions or purposes, authorize any contracts, solicitations, or other documents such as permit applications, owner affidavits, regulatory filings, et cetera, necessary to complete the development. Contracts authorized in writing by the committee chair shall be executed by the board chair. There is a presumption in that when we authorize something on behalf of the board, that we're knowledgeable about what we're doing. And so there's
like where you're going in.
Right. Making
those decisions.
And yes.
And that is a good point.
Yeah.
And that will be a public meeting.
Yeah.
All of that input will be provided, and that's probably the best forum to provide that update is to the oversight committee.
Good.
The oversight committee will have minutes. It will generate, and as it says in here, will generate a report, and that report will go to the board.
I'm fully confident in the structure.
Yeah.
I think it's a healthy conversation.
That's a better way to.
Yeah.
You're right.
Very good points brought up. Other comments or questions related to the item?
Did that satisfy your concern?
I'm sorry,
Madam Chair. Yeah.
It was great, robust conversation, and we ultimately backed into what you were thinking and probably Anne.
If somebody along the way decides that they're being left out as a knowledgeable person in the community about this thing that they're very interested in, we're just going to have to be aware of that and pay attention to them.
And I have had people reach out to me and say,
I bet you have.
I have an interest in this.
Yes.
And we will include them to the best of our ability.
But right.
The other challenge is it can get unwieldy if you have too many voices in the room at the same time. And we're trying to figure out the best way to navigate that. But I mean, my objective is to get as much good input as possible.
Right.
But I don't know enough on my own for this, you know, very varied kind of facility.
Right.
And Michael doesn't either. I mean, this is all new for us. So.
Yep. And I actually think that members of the board can be listening posts. And if they hear that from somebody, they just need to get in touch with you.
If you have thoughts, something specific, let me know.
Yeah.
I can absorb that and use it as.
Yeah.
So again, I think great conversation. And I think as we go down this path, Naomi will play a great role too as we think about messaging and telling the story. Because we realize that there's an element of that we need to communicate to the public to keep them
attached. As we heard from ROI.
So please know that will be happening as well. So again, great conversation. Action to be taken. Is there a motion?
Well, let me ask one more question.
Yes, sir. You're recognized.
I'm not sure if I might. I hear in the room a lot of interest in making sure the board does know what all is going on and selection of free people. I've noticed in several times when I've had committee chair assignments, I have invited any member of the board who wanted to come and sit in that meeting to attend. Is there any ability to do that with what we're setting up here?
Absolutely.
For the sunshine, anybody could attend.
Yeah, that meeting is open. That's a public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I would like it to be then published to the board, meeting dates and so on, that board members may wish to attend can do so.
The big difference is by having three, it makes it easier for us to schedule quick meetings. Mm-hmm. The bigger the committee gets, the harder it is to schedule a quick meeting. But otherwise, if here's the meeting date, you want to show up virtually or otherwise, we will have the same rules. We'll have to have a quorum in the room. So two will have to be in the room, and a third can be virtual. And then any of the other board members who wish to listen in could be on the virtual call.
You're exactly right. So yeah, it will be open to everybody, as many who wants to attend. Yeah. Okay. And so Dave, was that a motion that was following your comment and a clarification? Okay.
Motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Thank you very much. So it's been properly motioned and second. The approval of the Northward Innovations Lab Oversight Committee. All in favor, please acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition?
Aye.
Sanjoy, opposition or acceptance?
Acceptance.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries unanimously. So let's move into item number 11, FDOT, the Fitch Building Lease. Ron?
Madam Chair, this item is the formalization of the terms of an extension that the board previously approved. So we were able to incorporate those terms as the board approved into a formal lease. We made a couple of minor adjustments to clarify some maintenance issues that weren't contemplated in the original lease because of the lease term. We've clarified those, and basically the frequency at which things need to be painted and carpet and floors, you know, replaced, that sort of thing, which is nothing more onerous than what we had before. If anything, we clarified, for example, the exterior paint, which is a special kind of paint that doesn't need to be repainted. Previously, the lease was trying to force us to repaint it, even if it didn't need to be. So we fixed that. They've agreed to that. They've been very cooperative. DOT is very, very happy with getting this done. It's actually been very, very well received on both sides. So I would recommend that you approve this lease.
Thank you. You're recognized.
Madam Chair, I'd like to compliment Ron on pulling this process together. We were really looking at a horrible financial situation.
A really dire situation. You stole my words, yeah.
His ability to sit down and to think through this process and to negotiate with the parties, I'm really impressed. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Absolutely a win-win. Other comments? Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, so it's been properly motioned and second the approval of the FDOT Phipps building lease. All in favor, please acknowledge with aye.
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 Opposition? None? Okay, motion carries. Moving to the chair's report, brief comments on that. It just been recognizing when we all came together back in September, going over the plan of this park and the work that we need to do and what the two priorities were and how we look to carry those things out. It's amazing to see in just a short amount of time how all of those things are coming into fruition, inclusive of the partnership conversations as well. It's represented today even with the OEB and ROI conversation and how we are intimately woven into their conversation and messaging for what community. So just kudos to this entire leadership board and body and just to the team, the staff. I think we're checking a lot of boxes and for good reason. So thank you for that. And with that, I'll transition to the executive director report. Ron.
Thank you for that. So just a few items from my report I wanted to highlight. And you know, one of the, particularly related to the incubator, one of the things we need to continue to work on is the potential funding from FAMU. And I want to thank Chair Moore. She's picked up the baton on that and is trying to move that forward. Again, what we're looking for is to have some, recognizing that they're probably not going to get a big chunk going towards the construction, but for the opportunity to have some annual recurring funding that can go towards operations and equipment would be incredibly helpful for us. So we look forward to continuing that conversation with FAMU and moving that forward. Having said that, I do also want to point out that Michael has been very active in working with David Teague at FAMU. David, we've had a relationship with him for quite a while now, but David has us at top of mind when it comes to trying to find ways to channel funds from grants that he gets to us. And so Michael has some other opportunities that we're exploring and some that we're receiving, and he can tell you more in his report about the specifics of that funding. But just because it's not specifically designated to the incubator doesn't mean that we're not getting anything out of FAMU that's helping us with the development, because those funds are going to help us develop the pipeline of clients that are going to go into the incubator. So okay. So I'm very happy to report that, and he can talk more about that in his report. In terms of our priority 1B, the financial sustainability piece, we continue to have some activity. I had listed in here that we were working with a prospect who was looking for about 5,000 square feet, but had said it was going to have to go out to an RFP. I got a call a few days ago. They are now back in hurry up mode. And so we think we can do this at least initially without an RFP. And we're looking if he's still working on his board for approval, but we're looking at a potential April 1 start. And we are going to look at doing a three-year term. It's probably going to work out depending on how much we discount for the term, but probably around $80,000 a year for that space. So it's a good opportunity.
Which place again?
Second floor Morgan.
Okay.
So it will require us to do some basic renovations with flooring, paint, ceiling tile kind of things. And so Stephanie's in the process of getting quotes for us on that. But the assumption is that it will have at least 3 years of rent to help pay for whatever we need to do within reason. If it does go to any sort of tenant improvements, we'll obviously push for the tenant to pay for those renovations over the term of their lease, even if we have to fund a little bit of it up front. So that's moving forward. Very excited about that. We're also looking at renewals of some leases, like the FSU lab. That's coming up already. It has Merrill coming up on a year on the COVID situation. So working on that, and I've been informed that they do believe that's going to be renewed. One item, again, related to FAMU, one of the things we're working on is on that Tallahassee magazine technology ad. So the board had approved continuing forward with the tech grant, and FAMU had agreed to provide $12,500 in funding. The challenge we have that's come up is that they are not able to provide that money for prizes to companies because it's coming from an EDA grant. So it has to be used in support of the program, but not the prize money. So what we're looking to do is find other places that we can use that we've already decided to spend money, not new money, and just sort of shift the budget to where we need to shift that 12.5. As long as it's for the innovation ecosystem building, it will qualify. So I'm trying to make the case that this ad for $5,000 is going into the technology and innovation supplement to the Tallahassee magazine should qualify. So we're going to have to get creative and figure out how to get the money going into the right pot, but we'll still get the money. If we have the tech grant event in person, that's not hard because it's about $8,000 in expenses. But if it's virtual, we have a lot less in expenses, so it's a little bit harder to do, but we'll get there. Just know that's a little hurdle we're trying to overcome. I'm continuing with the briefings of the elected officials, the newly elected officials. So we'll be briefed. I've already briefed Representative Allison Tant and Commissioner Jack Porter. Both very enthusiastic about Innovation Park and just went extremely well. I'm meeting next week with Senator Osley and Commissioner Welch. So we continue to move that forward. In terms of the audit's moving forward. Just about done with that. So I'm working on the final piece of the puzzle, which is my management discussion and analysis and my review. I've already been through the auditor's review. There are no major findings at this point, so we're in good shape there. The audit committee meeting is February 22nd, so we'll have an agenda going out on the 15th of this month. And one last thing, the elevator upgrade. We'd hope to have an RFP for you to consider today, but Stephanie and I got into the weeds on this, and it's a little more complex than our typical maintenance item. So we are looking at trying to find a consultant that we can hire for not a lot of money to help us develop the scope of work to go into the RFP to make sure we do it right. Stephanie did a great job trying to pull all the pieces together based on other things that she has seen. But when we got to it, it was the scope of work is, you know, like 20 or 30 pages, something crazy. But we just think we need a better set of eyes to look at that to make sure we do that correctly. So we're going to bring that back as soon as we can. The other thing we're doing to expedite that process is, even though we had originally intended to split and still intend to split the upgrades on those elevators between two budget years, we'll go ahead and bid out both of them at the same time and just schedule it, stay, you know, in those two budget years. So hopefully that'll actually benefit us in terms of cost a little bit as well. Definitely will save us time on the RFP process. And that is all I have.
Ron, great report. Or was that Tom?
I just
you can't deal with the math. So
I just had a question. You mentioned that you were doing the updates to the newly elected officials.
Yes.
And have you reached out to Carolyn Clemens?
Peggy is handling the scheduling on that. I didn't want to do them all at the same time. So we do them one at a time. So I've been trying to pick up a couple a month. But yes, Peggy is. Peggy has that on her radar. So okay. She's shaking her head. Yes.
Okay. That was it.
Okay. Thank you, Keith.
And Dave? A lot of moving parts now with the budget and process of flow and leases coming in and all. Next meeting will be 6 months into the year. I might ask the executive director to have a pro forma of what we might expect most likely to happen with the year's income and expenses.
Great idea. Yeah, absolutely. And Kristen, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick clarification, Ron. I've got the audit committee on my calendar for February 23rd.
Entirely possible.
Okay. Just making sure that we have the right, that was Peggy's, yeah, she's nodding. Okay. It's 23rd. Okay. Just want to make sure we're in the right place at the right time.
Yes, my schedule says the 23rd as well. Awesome. It's my handwriting. That's the problem.
That's no problem. I understand it. Madam Chair, I neglected to mention one thing about the advisory and the work group. And so if I can go back for 1 second, sure. I got kind of caught up in the attendance and everything. I think I mentioned this a few months ago, but just as a reminder, the Appalachia Regional Planning Council represents our economic development district according to the EDA. So the award from the EDA is really a regional award. And of course, Leon Tallahassee can qualify for more funding at times and has more opportunities than some of the other counties in our region. So there is a strong desire from our other economic development partners in the region to participate in this process, to think about how we can look at the regional impact for the North Florida Innovation Labs. Mm-hmm. A couple of conversations I've had, I've really try to focus on those companies that have come to us, whether tech grant winners or others, that didn't come from the universities necessarily. Someone creates a new widget or something like that, that they could benefit from this program either virtually or in person or potentially the lab. I'd like to suggest Richard Williams, who's the director for Opportunity Florida. Kim, I know you've worked with him a good bit. His organization covers a few different counties. We also have North Florida Economic Development Partners with Jeff Hendry and a couple of new economic development groups, but Gaston County would be Beth Kirkland and others. So primarily Richard Williams, and I think he can help coordinate, but bringing those folks in, it's not necessarily the programming. It could be some marketing, it could be some outreach, but I think for the EDA scope of this grant, at some point in this process, it's going to be really important for us to bring those voices in and to talk about how we can make this a regional asset. Is that absolutely amenable?
Right. And that's on target. That's a great conversation. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. I have an executive committee meeting with the Regional Planning Council that actually is immediately after our meeting today. So I told the director that I would mention it here and I would share it with the executive committee and he will help coordinate with some of that contact information. Ron, if that's yes. The best way to do the next steps.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for not taking that off the radar. I think that's so critical that they understand it and yeah. We're not competing, that they understand that it's an incubator for the region. So yeah, great.
Doing this regional coordination could position the whole region.
Correct.
It could benefit Leon and Tallahassee greatly. Correct. In the future so that we can show EDA that we really are focused on what they want us to focus on as a regional asset. So I think this is good for us.
Yep. That addresses our concerns as well.
Excellent.
So that's
great.
Thank you. Other that's comments or questions? Okay, then we'll transition quickly into Michael's report.
Hi, everyone. You have a report included in your packet, but I did want to point out a couple of highlights. We have our first co-working member that converted from a virtual member now to be in-house as a co-working member, and that's Manzer Edbrook Technology. So we're happy to have them and welcome them as a co-working member. We segued them into the facility this week. And so they're doing great things in CNC machines and rapid prototyping. I've also been looking at some CRM programs, and IncuTrack is something that I've used in the past, but it was not a very strong program. Lately, they've included a number of very good modules, which you see presented in your packet as well. But I did want to point out three things. One, that it's very good now at presenting economic impact data. It's got some new algorithms. I know the folks over there for working with them for 17 years. They've got a really good program now for impact data and client tracking that also includes tracking participants at our various events and also prospect tracking. I will say, however, after looking at a number of different programs, HubSpot has a better prospect pipeline management system, and something called Monday.com has actually been ranked number one on various groups that rank these things, as well as Salesforce. So we still haven't ruled out which program to use. I'm still evaluating them. The other thing with IncuTrack, it's highly customizable. So we can do anything we want. We can brand it ourselves. We can do custom reports. We can do anything we want with it. And it includes events that'll do automatic reminders by email, and then a calendar for internal, but also room scheduling as well. I'll leave the rest in the report for you to look at your leisure. I've been continuing to review SBIRs. I'm working on a new one for a Navy contract, a company called Altor Labs out of Panama City. That was a referral from one of our advisors, Amy Reich, a local angel. And they're thinking of moving here should they get the award. So I've been doing that as a highlight for the SBIRs, also assisting entrepreneurs as well. And then we've segued the EEP program into something new called, TechForce. And TechForce is going to be focusing more on, obviously, technology via the name, but also in prototyping aspects as well. And so we have already received three applicants, and we just opened it up for applications. So happy to see that that's moving forward. I think that's going to be a good program. A couple of things that are not on the list because they just recently happened. Ron mentioned that we received a grant from FAMU, which is a NASA grant, where we're doing SBIR solicitations for minority and women-owned businesses for NASA contracting through the SBIR program. We also have a new virtual member application that went out to our advisory board. I'm not sure how applicable it is. It's more of a software play, but it's a company out of Tampa. And so it's in the review process from our advisory group, but I'm happy to see referrals that came from FAMU. I'm happy to see referrals coming in and more virtual members that are coming into the program. We were also asked yesterday to present at the Synapse Summit that's coming up in March, the 8th through the 11th. And I've been working with the Synapse folks down in Orlando and Tampa to see what they wanted as far as the Innovation Park overview and the tech companies that will be highlighted. And I got some information today by email that it looks like the video that was presented by OEV might be appropriate, as well as some other visuals more than just talking about it on a Zoom call. So it is going to be a virtual Synapse meeting. Their first year, 2 years ago, had 1,000 attendees. That last year had 7,000 attendees. And this year being virtual, they're anticipating as many as 10,000 that'll be on that Zoom call. And for the first time, probably outside of Florida folks as well. So it's a good marketing effort for Innovation Park through the Synapse Summit. And two things I wanted to ask your help with. One of our virtual members, Blue Quench, they're going to be presenting their product on QVC coming up pretty soon. Part of that contract requires that they need 1,000 pieces of or two in order to produce that amount, they're going to need between $400,000 and $500,000 of investment. And so I'm looking for anyone that can assist with that. I sent out a couple of inquiries. I've gotten some responses, but I'd really like to see their product highlighted on QVC, because once that happens, they're going to move to Tallahassee from Destin, and they're going to set up production facilities here. So it's a manufacturing opportunity for Tallahassee. Another group, Persica, which is in solid state lithium ion battery technologies, they're looking for a new business development person. I'll also say slash marketing person. So that is an opportunity, job opportunity for a new up and coming company that has proven technology with a number of different patents. There's more information out there. I can talk to folks individually, but it's on our website as well. And then lastly, you'll see some information on the report about the tech grant winners, the status of those winners over the past 5 years. By contract, when they sign their application, they need to provide us some feedback for 5 years out, which is why we started at 5 years. And there's only 9 companies rather than 10, because one company was participating as a finalist in 2 years. So we have 9 unique companies, and all of that information is provided in the report for your viewing pleasure. Please ask me any questions. I have all the statistics here and some follow-up and that I did with some probing. One curious thing is that you all know the company KinderMed, which is now a company called Prina out of St. Petersburg. And interestingly enough, they reported no full or part-time employees. So I'm going to try to follow up with their CEO and find out how that works. Any questions on the report, please?
Michael, I think great report. Just a couple of quick questions regarding the CRM that we anticipate using. Are we also working with our other incubator partners, if you will, in the ecosystem to determine what they're using and just getting feedback from them as well?
Yeah, and that's how this got started. It was referrals from them, and then I did some deep reviews of the programs. And I originally had eliminated IncuTrack based on past experience, but they've significantly improved their offering. And that was actually what's being used out at Sid Martin with Mark Long. And Ron talked to Mark as well.
So we found a thread where they had been talking exactly about that problem, and Mark Long had responded in that thread about what he had been using, and he had looked at a lot of different ones and came back to EQTrack as well. So yes, yeah. Mark helped even indirectly.
Thank you. And then the last question is just specific to Tech Force. I like the pivot and the name change on that, but what's our cohort size that we're targeting?
Looking for 12 to 15 companies to come in, and each company can have 2 representatives.
Oh, okay. Other comments or questions related to Mike's report? Kristen, you're recognized.
I was just curious. I really appreciate the ask for help. I mean, that's a great thing to focus on. Mm-hmm. Michael, I think you said, at least related to the jobs of Persica, it's on the website. So can you point me in the right direction? Is that the North Florida website? Are we posting those jobs announcements, helping those companies, or?
It's a good question. What I meant is that more information about the companies on the website. I'm now waiting for those folks to send me a position description so we can post it there. OEV has reached out to them, and they'll have it on their site as well. And then I'll be contacting the career source folks as soon as I get that one page write up.
Okay.
And we did, and to clarify, we did discuss adding a jobs menu item on the website, which we don't currently have because we frankly haven't had any before.
Right.
Yeah. So we will put that on the website.
That's where my mind went, is that, you know, it's another reason for people to come and see our website, but also helping those companies that are members of the lab. So that's fantastic. For Blue Quench, I mean, that's a little bit of a different ask. I see the company's description on the website. I'm just wondering if you have a specific, maybe an email from you, Michael, that we could pass on to people if you're looking for investors. I mean, I thought that's what you were aiming for, is that they need investors to help them get that product before they go to QVC. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And I did craft an email that I sent to my network of investors and some local folks as well, including Steve Evans and Kim Williams and James Taylor and others. And I've gotten two responses that would like to take a look. So anyone else that could think of folks that might be interested, I'd love to have their names. And what I'm trying to do, and with Blue Quench has agreed to, is they'll come over anytime from Destin to not only talk about the terms and talk about his product, but demonstrate the actual prototype that he's already made.
I think going to your network first is absolutely the best idea, but when you send those emails, if it's appropriate, I'm wondering if you can also send it to the board so that we can share that and let you know if we have any contacts as well. Again, we may not be as lucrative as, you know, your other list of contacts, but I think keeping us on the same page, and that's just a way for us, if we get a question from someone like Steve or one of the members of the advisory board, that we are in the loop, we know what's happening on that side. Is there any problem with that?
I don't see a problem. One of the reasons why I didn't act on that sooner is because I needed an okay from the owner to announce the QVC connection, because they were waiting in order for them to do that. They can't publicly announce it, but internally I can, even if it is public record. So he gave me that okay just yesterday. So those are the first people, or I'm sorry, on Tuesday. So those are the first people I sent it out to, but I will certainly do that from this point forward.
Okay. It's not that anything hasn't been done that should have been done. These are just new opportunities, you know, new things we haven't had to talk about before. So I think that would be helpful. That's
it. It's the news that we're covering. I think we'll get more of that. So exciting. Use the network. So thank you, Michael, for a great report. And Naomi, we'll transition to you.
Okay, we're gearing up for the next Tech Topics, which is on Tuesday, February 16th. We're talking about new projects happening in the park. So we've got from Danfoss, we've got Ricardo and Sanjoy, and then Christina Casey, their senior HR manager, to talk about the Danfoss expansion. And then we're also going to discuss the MagLab MagCorp partnership. So we've got Greg Bobinger and Jeff Whalen to talk about that. We've got 43 registered so far, which is the most that we've had registered for a tech topic. So there's a lot of interest for this topic. So I'm hoping that we can get at least 50 signed up by the time the event is. So I'm looking forward to that. Our next Tech Topics is April 20th. So gear up for that after this one. And then moving on, as Michael mentioned, we rebranded EEP as Tech Force. So came up with the name, the new logo, and the tagline, and all of those changes have been reflected on the website if you want to go and kind of check out the new logo if you haven't seen it yet. All of our followers are increasing. We have been continually getting more and more, and people are responding well to our posts. And then lastly, as Ron had mentioned earlier, we have that magazine ad in the Tallahassee Innovation and Technology magazine. That will be published in early spring. I don't know the exact date, but I wanted to see if there was a quick second if I could share my screen and show everybody the ad, just so you all can see. You see this?
Not yet.
My ball. Ron, I was
wondering how that was going to happen over there without you, but I thought you knew something else.
Are y'all seeing this?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah, this is the ad, just so y'all can see. I know it's kind of small to read the words, but just wanted to give you guys the gist of what the ad looks like. April Salter, I reached out to her, and she and her team were a great help in coming up with the design and finalizing everything. So I'm really looking forward to that being published and hopefully giving us some good circulation around the region. So, yep, that's it for me.
So, Naomi, can you put that graphic back up there for just a moment?
Sure.
To Stephen's report and thinking about the 1,600 companies that have a magnetic element to it, mm-hmm. and the 1,200 that we're going to reach out to in the coming year, understanding that many people are looking, this is a 5-minute old thought, so it's not been formulated, but if what we're looking for are people who are interested in locating here, and for some reason, as they go through the funnel, they decide not to locate here, but we are the magnetic capital of the world. Is there another platform that companies might want to participate in to be connected with Innovation Park that's a virtual connection? I don't know what that looks like, but is there another level of offering so that we are continuing to pull people in? I don't know where that goes. I'm lobbing it up.
And I'll tell you, I'm pointing at you, Ron, because it goes back to a conversation that we were talking about, like a virtual menu. I wonder if there's an opportunity that, yeah, we're going to have a face-to-face, but we realize that everybody's virtual now. What's the opportunity to create a virtual menu of services? What would that look like? And how could we still benefit, much like what, you know, Michael is doing, but maybe we get hands in a bit to find out, you know, if there are services that we can be connecting them with, even in this virtual environment, and them not have to be here and take advantage of it. Yeah, that's
okay.
I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know exactly, but that can be something that I'll definitely work on.
That it's not a loss that if they're not looking to locate here, there's still opportunities, and maybe that we could even highlight that in things like this, what we're doing with this publication.
Sure, and if people want us to, if companies wanted to participate on a virtual level and they would be a member and they would pay some type of a membership fee, that's a pretty easy budget item. I have no idea what that
is. Well, and that's what we're doing with Infill. The question is, what other services, you know, are there that Park can provide? That I'm not sure about, other than, you know, we're doing Tech Topics virtually.
Maybe that's the marketing and packaging of that. Maybe it's not anything new. Maybe it is the packaging of that we're expressing and making available so that they can stay connected.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keep thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, great. Okay. Thank you. You recognize.
Regarding the Tech Topic thing, it's not listed here as meetings and events coming up forward. I think we ought to try to get those that are listed again.
Yeah, we typically
be
do.
Part of that. I would encourage our board members to participate in some of those meetings. I know in the past it's been very sparsely attended by board members, but there's some great stuff going on there, and I think you just need to know and be aware of what all the organization is providing to the Innovation Park community. So
what
the day and the date and time is, what?
And Peggy, if you could make sure the board is included on the calendar invite for that meeting, I think that would be helpful. But just as an example, this last meeting that we had, Blue Quench, the company that's looking for funding, was one of the presenters on that. You would have been able to see exactly what it is that they do. And we try to include those kinds of things on there as well. But I think, to your point, David, I think it'd be great if we could get a really good turnout for Ricardo to see all of the board members on that call. I just think he needs to see that you guys are all there. And even though you approved all this and you're going to see and know everything that he's going to talk about, I think. But he's also, he did this for OEB's stakeholder group as well. Actually, both of them did. And that's when I saw it and thought, hey, this would be great for Tech Topics. But just to have that show of presence by our board, I think would be great to reinforce the relationship with Dan Boss.
Let's repeat the time and date again.
Naomi?
It's Tuesday, February 16th, and it's 11 to 12 on Zoom.
So if you get Naomi, can you send out to the board the registration again?
Sure.
Mr. Nick, you'll get as a part of the registration. But also, you know, Naomi sends out notifications on this stuff on a regular basis. I mean, so much that I think some people probably get tired of seeing it. But so when you get those notifications, go ahead and register, because you'll get all the follow-up reminders and links and all that stuff.
Thank you, Fiona. Great comment on there. And certainly our participation is encouraged on that as much as we can. So the next item we'll transition to, and you're about to take us home with that, Stephanie, your report.
Actually, Ron covered some of the things I was going to mention, the highlights of my report with the elevator and also with an informal RFP for the landscaping contract. And I'm almost done knocking out all of our deferred maintenance. So the only thing left will be the parking lots, which are going to be towards the end of our budget year. And then the elevators, which you guys already know about that schedule. And a back deck for night. And then after that, I'll be done with my deferred maintenance. So I'm excited about that. Thank you. And that's about all I've got.
Well, that's a lot to have. So thank you. Thank you for that. And as we look at any business,
Dave, you're ready to go? Madam Chair, not new business, but I think Mr. Dozier and I, being on the board the longest of all, would comment that the last quarter has probably been the most significant achievements that this organization has had. We've renegotiated the Florida Transportation lease. We've been able to achieve the awarding of an EDC grant. And we have a major announcement of expansion of a Danfoss tenant. What an impactful quarter this has been. I'm proud of the association with this group, but I'm proud of what our executive director has done, his staff, and this board. I just didn't want this to go without some notification. What a great last quarter we've had.
I assure you it is absolutely that, and we won't ever have a problem ever again with anybody wanting to serve in an officer role. There's just going to be a line waiting for board member service, so I'm anticipating all the ways that it will
just be. Get behind Kevin, though. He's
yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. We got Kevin. Kevin's locked in, so that's good. But no, you are absolutely right. Kudos to everybody. It's so exciting, and even to hear the deferred maintenance list, how we're knocking that out to all soldiers. Kristen, you're a big mess.
I appreciate your comments, Dave. I think not pushing back on that at all, but I have reflected recently on maybe needing to stop saying the longest board members. I mean, you and I really take a lot of ownership in that, but some of you have been here for a really long time, and this is a long-term effort. And nothing we got done in the last couple months could have happened without years and years of work and all of you participating. So that was just piggybacking. Madam Chair, what I wanted to mention was when I asked Christina that question about will we get an opportunity at OEB to talk about some of these things, my mind was on the February, I'll tell you exactly what the date is. It is February 18th, Blueprint IA board meeting. We will actually have a strategic planning meeting for OEB at 1 o'clock before our 3 p.m. board meeting. And I'm not sure if the mayor's seen this yet, but at the county retreat, we had a really deep, it was a great conversation about what Commissioner Maddox termed the pathway to job creation. We got a lot of new members, got a lot of incredible progress that's happening, but really wanted to focus on just that outline. What do your policymakers, your elected boards, what is our role in the pathway to job creation? And we asked the county administrator to bring in an agenda item for Blueprint that'll focus on that. I think we're not gonna have time to cover everything in 2 hours, but I wanted to highlight that meeting for you all because we have so much overlap with Blueprint. I think it might be a lot of good information. It will be virtual. You don't have to watch it on that date, but you could see it. Reflecting on that, you know, what we hear from OED and that those kind of concepts might help our conversation. And, you know, if it's not Innovation Park related, I'm sure we'd all love to hear your thoughts just in general, you know, we can talk about that. But I just wanted to highlight that meeting because I think it may be of interest to some of you all and hopefully other members. So that's it.
Well, great point to make on that, because as we hear earlier with OED, I mean, the level of collaboration, how we're all interconnected and moving this community forward, it's evident. So great point. I actually want to learn more about that.
Other new business or comments? If not, then move to
Madam Chair.
Oh, right. Yes, yes.
All throughout this whole meeting, we've had a lot of reflection on the really positive things that have taken place, particularly in the last 4 to 6 months with the EDA grant and with the Innovation Labs contract and with Danfoss. And I just want to say, based on that report that we got from OEV, as well as from ROI, about the pipe, the funnel coming in with all of these potential prospects, I want to go back to points I have made several times on this board. And that is, my concern is that we are focused on, we are running out of space. And if any of those significant opportunities come forward, I'm afraid that we're going to find ourselves with an inability to be able to effectively respond. And so I hope that we're not in a situation where we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. While we're really celebrating what we've got, starting construction and groundbreaking and so forth, I really think we need to, as a board or as a group on the board, to begin to look forward and figure out a way to how this park can expand. I think we are landlocked or limited in the land space that we've got. So our offerings are going to be very limited to people who are looking for space. So I just want us to keep that eye on that ball as we move forward, and not just, you know, reflect on those wonderful successes we've just had, but we ought to be looking forward and figuring out a way that how are we going to have those kind of successes in the future. So, thank you.
No. Great point, and appreciate that, because you're right. I mean, we do need to do both. So thank you. Thank you for centering us on that. Celebrate, but also remember there's great work ahead. So thank you, and then we will continue to push forward on that. Ron, you and I could talk about that when we do our one-on-one as well. Again, thank you for everybody's time and attention. I hope that you all enjoy the rest of your day, and meeting's adjourned.